On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we recap the WBC semifinal between Team USA and Team Dominican Republic, which packed a whole lot of action into a low-scoring ball game and unfortunately ended with a terrible strike three call. But it was still a game we'll remember for a long time, and we dig into all that and more in this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that watched the USA play the Dominican Republic last night. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And thank God we were there so someone could talk about it.
Someone had to do it. So we volunteered. We said, all right, if we must, we will even go. We will go to Lone Depot Park and we will watch the two best baseball rosters of all time square off in a consequential contest that we will certainly remember for a long time. I am back here on Baseball Barbacast. Shouts out to Chelsea James for filling in for me on Friday. But I'll be honest, Jake, as I speak to you here early on Monday morning, this is a weird one. This is a weird one for me. I feel like parachuting into a game like this, my first ever WBC game. Later on, we are going to talk about Jake's experience on Saturday night. And of course, he has attended some of the other WBC games since we last spoke. But for me to land on Saturday night and then to just show up to this baseball game of all baseball games and watch it unfold, and now to try and talk about it on not a lot of sleep, is going to be very interesting. But all that said, I feel very fortunate to have witnessed what I did, and I'm excited to try and process the baseball that we witnessed on Sunday night in Miami, Florida.
That's the whole episode. And I guess it's our opener. You know who didn't use an opener? Either of these teams. Paul Skeens on the bump for Team USA going against Luis Severino for the Dominican Republic. When all these players took the field right after the introductions before the national anthem, it came over me that I was sitting in a building about to witness the two most talented rosters in the history of the sport, non-All-Star Game edition, compete. And I got a little emotional about it, Jordan. I'm not going to lie. Not because, you know, I was just super amped about Austin Wells and, you know, Luis Severino and Bryce Terang, but just that, not to toot our own horn, but that I got to be in the building for that, that we were there to witness it. That is incredibly lucky and incredibly fortunate. It is that sheer fact we will remember for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And again, my kind of discombobulated introduction is mostly to convey that sentiment you just shared is certainly something that when we arrived at the end of last year's postseason, we really tried to get through.
Man.
Because of how special, of course, the World Series was. But there was a buildup there, right? And obviously, we've been watching this tournament for the last 10 days, but I haven't seen a game yet in person. And that's also a really short amount of time and not actually that many games. And also, it's still March. And so, like, I'm not really in the mode of, like, covering a postseason game yet. And yet, there I was last night watching this semifinal game that I clearly these teams care a lot about. And I was certainly excited to watch.
Yeah.
And just to be thrust into it. And it was just like, oh, my God, how did I get here? Am I actually – why are all these feelings already here in the middle of March? It was really strange.
It was like running a marathon having no training, kind of. It's like, I didn't build up. I didn't do 5 miles, then 10 miles. It was like, you're going to go 26, and you're going to go 26 right now.
Yeah.
It was really remarkable. Now, because Team USA did not win its pool, it was the road team on Sunday night. And it was the road team in energy as well. I would say that the crowd split at Lone Depot Park was I think it was about like 50% DR, 40 to 30% US, and then the rest neutral. fans. Like, there were a decent number of Japanese fans there that made the flight, watched their team get smacked, and then didn't have a flight home yet. The atmosphere was great, but then, you know, whatever the breakdown was in terms of actual butts and seats, the difference in noise was ridiculous and obvious. Like, it wasn't even close.
Yeah, and that sort of evolved as the night went on, and Team USA grabbed a lead and started to have its moments. I mean, yeah, there were USA fans there, and that is the cool thing about an atmosphere like this, is it really did feel like every big moment was getting a big crowd pop. Now, to your point, the Dominican crowd pops were a little bit different, and we can start getting into some of those. So as you mentioned, Severino against Paul Skeens. And as you mentioned, because Team USA is the away team, that means this incredible lineup that teams, they get to hit first. How about that?
Right away.
Which is exciting because of the baseball players that are on their team. But also, they were not the lineup that everyone was looking forward to watching. And so instead, it was really an opportunity and a showcase of Luis Severino, who were clearly intrigued by as an X factor. So, yeah.
He was the most important player in this game. And I think if you told me that the DR lost this game, I would have assumed that Severino had a bad night. He was, at least in theory, the underbelly of the plan. A pitcher who was once great and was then awful and hurt and then was pretty good again. And last year was just okay. Now, granted, he had to pitch in Sacramento quite a bit of the time, something that he very obviously clearly did not enjoy, as he was public about. But when you put him up against this lineup on paper and you put him up against Paul Skeens, Severino was the weak link. And boy, was he not the weak link last night. He got into a little bit of trouble in a couple of the innings that ramped his pitch count up, but he was throwing absolute fuel last night from the jump.
Yeah, and I'm glad you referenced what happened to him last night, and I had that thought going into it, which is just like, man, this guy whose entire narrative last season was how much he despises pitching at home gets the assignment where he effectively gets to have the greatest home field advantage you are going to have in a non-MLB situation, and both in terms of the team, of course, that was behind him, but also the crowd and just the energy. And the stuff showed. I mean, he comes out and strikes out Bobby Witt Jr. and is screaming, and strikes out Bryce Harper and is screaming, and then get a couple little bit of traffic, but he gets out of it. Second inning, again, he gets a big double play to get out of that inning. And then the third inning, well, let's go to the bottom of the second, because I think this is where we have our first big moment on the other side here. Yeah, I would say this qualifies. I would say this was something. And this was
not a crowd pop. This was a crowd implosion. This at bat was very interesting. Junior Caminero against Paul Skeens. And with Caminero, there's just so much going on in the swing. Like, there's so much movement, but his hands are so fast that he can get to stuff. You kind of got the sense over the course of this at bat that he was selling out for the heater early in the at bat. He was early on stuff. Like, he Skeens through a couple of splitters below the zone that Caminero looked totally lost on. And we get to a 2-strike count and Skeens goes to the sweeper. And I think that was a totally reasonable decision because Caminero just looked geared up for the heater. But because he's a freako with quick hands, he's able to kind of keep his hands back as his body's moving forward. Skeens leaves it up a little bit. I mean, it was on the black out, but it was still elevated. A pitch that probably should have been down, and Caminero golfs it out to left and Lone Depot Park. Whew. I mean,
dude,
that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. And obviously you have the roof closed. That's going to help. But just the first, I don't know, leading up really the whole inning because of how Severino was pitching too. You know, he was supplying some of the energy as well while they, you know, were not hitting. But the Caminero homer, and it was so perfect, right? The fact that it was him, the fact that it was the 15th home run, the setting a new record for most home runs by a single team in a single World Baseball Classic. And at that point, it was like, all right, well, here they go, right? This is just going to be another Dominican party where there's just a bunch of homers, and we're watching. Of course, he has this incredible bat flip, and he's hopping around the bases, and it's like, okay, Paul Skenes is awesome, but this team is completely unstoppable. And that was ultimately not the case, but again, like, we still had another inning of Dominican energy, because in the top of the third, Severino strikes out PCA. He does allow a few base runners in Bobby Witt and Bryce Harper. But then, to finish the third inning, and what seemed like kind of emptying the tank, he strikes out Aaron Judge, and he strikes out Kyle Schwarber. And these sweepers
with
that he threw...
With a pair of sweepers.
Oh my goodness. The one to Judge was just, like, legitimately perfect, and, like, that's just how you get Aaron Judge out. So there's nothing about that. The Schwarber one was more notable because while it was at 88, which is ridiculous velocity for a sweeper, and you can imagine that the horizontal movement on that pitch with the spin rate that he was, you know, ripping them is not an easy pitch to kind of see, but it was right in the middle of the plate. Like, that is a pitch that we have watched Kyle Schwarber destroy into outer space many times during his career, and he just watched it. And to get that called strike three, to finish the third inning, and, you know, his pitch count's approaching 60, I don't know if I thought Severino was definitely done there because it was just three innings, but it really felt like he was just emptying everything he had. However, yeah, that was not the end of his outing. But before the end of his outing, we had a very, very interesting play in the bottom of the third, which is, I know what you focused on in your story.
Aaron Judge changes the game so often. It is typically with his bat. But Aaron Judge's hitting prowess certainly overshadows the fact that he has, what, like a top five outfield arm in the sport. In the bottom of the third, runner on first base with two outs, Ketel Marte clocks one into right field. Fernando Tatis Jr. on first, rounds second, pushes towards third. Never be the third out at third, your 11-year-old travel ball coach said, their words ringing in your ears forever. Judge fields, gathers, transfers, throws, bang, bang, play, hits Gunnar Henderson in the chest at third, slaps the tag down, Tatis out, inning over. Juan Soto left to trudge back to the dugout. He would have had runners on the corners and two outs. And that play completely changed the game. Just totally changed the game.
Well, you say runners on the corners. I mean, runners on the corners if Tatis was safe. But Tatis also could have decided, sure, maybe I'm not going to run on Aaron Judge. And because one of the best hitters of all time in Juan Soto is about to hit, I'll just stop at second and see what happens. I think my takeaway from the Judge throw, of course, narratively, a lot of it goes back. Yes, he does have one of the best outfield arms. But as we know more recently, it is an arm that has been compromised, an arm that has been injured, an arm that has been tested at the end of last season when we were like, his arm doesn't work. Just run. Clearly, we saw it earlier in this tournament and clearly with a throw like this. However, he has managed to heal it up. He's looking just fine. And I think the thing that stands out to me about Judge playing defense is kind of a similar thing that I have brought up, I think, on the show on occasion just when talking about him hitting, which is just his size and how, yes, there are some times when he'll hit home runs, and because of how big he is and because of how easy it sometimes looks, the field just does not look large enough for a person that is that big. And I think that him kind of having defensive grace also sometimes limits the degree that which, like, his acrobatics look cool. Particularly, he had kind of like a weird sliding diving play later on where it was like a nice play, but it doesn't look quite as cool as it does with more normal sized people who are maybe stretching out and like leaping. But when he's throwing this well, and you watch the ball, like this tiny white sphere, come out of this enormous being and just be able to go where it's going, because it's different, because it's different than like an O'Neal Cruz throwing, because he's a little bit more lanky and it looks like more of a, or like Ellie De La Cruz, like when those guys are throwing, it looks like what you would expect. But With Judge, it's just it's such whippy. A unique.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's whippy. It's not with Judge. It's not that. It's just powerful, but it is so still precise, which is just astonishing. And it sure it makes sense. Like, yeah, of course he's huge and big and strong. Of course he's throwing the ball hard. But I know this is kind of a silly thing to bring up now. I just think about all the gigantic, you know, NBA players or that go out and try to deliver first pitches and how hard it is for them to look coordinated throwing a baseball.
Yeah.
And for Aaron Judge, it's like, nah, man, watch. Like I am a baseball player. That is what I do first. And I am also elite at this. And in this spot in the game where you can imagine Fernando Tatis Jr., his whole life is like, yeah, make the last out of third is really stupid. But also I'm Fernando Tatis Jr. Are you going to tell me to slow down? So he goes and tries to test it. And that was really the beginning. That was the play that really turned it and started to feel like, oh, hold on, Team USA actually might have the sauce tonight.
This was the fastest throw Judge has uncorked, and as far as I can tell, since the World Series in 2024. Some people were saying in almost 3 years. I think it's the fastest throw he's had in 3 years where the guy was out. I think it is more interesting, in my opinion, just like throw the ball hard. There was a play in the World Series where he tried to get, you know, Gavin Lux at home and Gavin Lux was safe and he threw that 98.2. But this throw, I believe, was 95.7. He did not throw a ball that hard all of last season. Remember, he spent like a 10-day stretch on the IL with an elbow issue, didn't play the field for a while after that. So to see him unleash this was pretty impressive. And it is something that the Dominican team should have known because Judge did have, you know, not a throw that hard in the pool play round, but certainly one that made him look healthy. Now, this changes the game, I think, for a number of reasons, right? It flips the energy. It takes the bat out of Juan Soto's hands. And then as we'll get to, it leads to a number of kind of cautious base running decisions from the Dominican Republic where they start to play with a little bit more passiveness and caution the rest of the way. But as far as the energy flip is concerned, that was pretty much immediate as the next batter of the proceedings, Gunnar Henderson, has a magnificent 9-pitch at bat, takes the 9th pitch, heater down the pipe, out to right for a solo shot to tie the game at 1. Henderson's inclusion in the lineup was not a given. There has been a lot of chatter about whether he or Alex Bregman should get the start at third base. They have switched off every game. After every Bregman start, the Orioles fans on the internet are understandably like, hey, you're sitting your third best player. And Gunnar made that look smart last night. Gunnar rounds the base. Gunnar's like goes down the line. He is absolutely fired up. One of the bigger explosions of emotion that we've seen from this USA team. Gunnar has been the player, I think, that has been the most openly emotional and bombastic during this tournament, and he gets the bench fired up. Two batters later, Roman Anthony, after Gregory Soto had come in, Soto leaves one like right down Broadway, like absolutely piped. Anthony does not miss it. Two swings, two runs, USA up in the blink of an eye.
And thus concluding the scoring for the evening. That was it. No more runs
as
were
we
scored
all predicted.
After that. That doesn't mean we are we're done recapping this game, but it is interesting to think that, yeah, there with, you know, one out in the top of the fourth was the last time someone scored in this game. Quickly back to Gunnar. I just think, that, you know, the Gunnar versus Bregman. Well, we knew this dynamic in some form was going to, we previewed it when we talked about Team USA. There was going to be situations like this where it was like, oh, who do you sip? These guys are all so awesome. And, you know, DeRosa Sano ride the hot hand. Not only has Gunnar been swinging it well in this tournament, but he's got this great, he's crushed Severino in his career. It's like, that's all true. Playing Gunnar Henderson is not some managerial masterclass. It's just, he's one of the best players in the world. He's better than Alex Bregman. And so, yes, he should have been in the lineup, and he was in the lineup. And he delivered, and that at bat against Severino was, especially going 9 pitches after Severino had kind of seemingly maybe reached the end of the line the inning before. At the end of that at bat, Severino had stayed away from the middle of the plate the whole time. He eventually just goes right there. You know, Gunnar doesn't miss it. I think the Roman Anthony at bat was even more interesting because Gregory Soto comes in specifically, you know, to get the lefties at the bottom of this lineup out. he immediately goes 3-0. And this is something that I think, looking at the Dominican bullpen in this tournament, this is something that they've generally avoided. A lot of these guys issue a lot of free passes, but by the way, this bullpen was still brilliant after this slip up from Gregory Soto. You have to say, absolutely, like that. The Dominican pitching was outstanding, but for Roman Anthony to go to 3-0 and then to basically, at that point, Soto just gives him three straight fastballs right down the middle. And Roman Anthony, even at 21, is just that good. He is not going to miss that pitch three times in a row. He watched the first one, fouled off the second one, and the third one he destroyed. And Roman Anthony is incredible, right? He's the youngest player on the team by far. He was at the championship game 3 years ago as a fan, right at the beginning of his career. And he also was not on this team. And should he have been on this team over Corbin Carroll to begin with before his hamate bone broke? Should he have been on this team instead of an Ernie Clement or a Paul Goldschmidt? You could argue all those things. Clearly, he was in the mix because of how quickly they picked him after Corbin Carroll got hurt. But with how he's shown, it's just like, how was he not on the team all along? And if Corbin Carroll was on the team, how much would he have even been playing? He might have been in that Bobby Witt role from a few years ago where he was just sitting on the bench having a good time because
he would have played.
Very talented.
Corbin Carroll would have played. He is the Team USA track. Like, he would have played.
Right.
This is just a fortunate. I think this is more just like fortune, unfortune, where it's like Anthony got the spot and he's taken full advantage, man. Like, he's a really special player. Everyone's spoken really highly of him. And there's a reason that he's here after only playing like 72 Major League Baseball games. You know what I mean? People around the sport can identify talent when they see it in front of them. And Roman Anthony definitely has it. Let's keep flying through this game. Skeens with a nice little shutdown inning piece in the fourth inning. He has a little bit of traffic with runners on second and third. The bases end up getting loaded. Austin Wells flies out to end the frame. The fifth inning is where things, I would say, is kind of our next tentpole moment, where the Dominicans have runners on first and second with one out. There was a play where Ketel Marte hit a ball to center field, and Fernando Tatis Jr. did not try and stretch from first to third with one out. That play undeniably was influenced by the Judge throw before. It was probably a send that Tatis makes 9 times out of 10. If he had not gotten thrown out earlier in the game, he's on third, runners on first and third. Now, spoiler, Juan Soto grounds into a double play. How much does it matter? You could talk about the alignment. You could talk about the pitch mix. You could talk about a bunch of different things. Do they send the runner? Does Ketel Marte try and steal? Probably not. He doesn't run that much. Whatever. Sliding doors moment. The upshot is it was uncharacteristically cautious from Tatis in that spot. Now, that hit by Marte also marks the end of Skeens' night. And in from the bullpen comes someone with the last name Rogers.
Yes, it was not the one on the Orioles, though it sounds like the Fox broadcast had, that was one of apparently a few miscues, which of course we were not really noticing because we were in the building. They put up the Trevor Rogers stats from last year. That is not a Rogers twin. Taylor Rogers, the left-handed version of the Rogers twin, was also not here. This is Tyler Rogers, who just got a bunch of money from the Toronto Blue Jays, despite having the slowest fastball in Major League Baseball, and that is because he throws from the ground. That is what he does. He is the funkiest of funky righties that we have in our game. He is the king of yielding weak contact with low velocity in, low velocity out, is basically the Tyler Rogers game plan. And because he has now been doing it for this long, and because Team USA needed a refresh bullpen, which is exactly what they got because they added a bunch of new pitchers before this game, Tyler Rogers was one of those. And this is someone who has an elite ground ball rate. And even though he did not have the handedness matchup against Juan Soto, because he is a righty, unlike his twin Taylor, nor his not twin Trevor, Tyler Rogers comes in to face Juan Soto and does the job immediately. And I think it was the second pitch, right? It was a 1-0. He throws two identical 82-mile-an-hour fastballs low and away, and Soto cannot resist, and he grounds into a double play, which was a pretty sick play for Bobby Witt Jr., we should note, who ranges to the second base side of the bag. Of course, he couldn't start there because don't you even think about shifting. But Bobby Witt Jr. is plenty fast enough to shuffle his feet over there, snag the ball, step on second base, and tuck it over to first for an inning-ending double play.
You say that he's not allowed to shift. I think that something that is worth mentioning here is that just because you can't stand to the right side of second base now as a shortstop doesn't mean you aren't shifting. Mm-hmm. Bobby Witt is shaded up the... He's basically a step to the appropriate allowed side of second base here, right? And that is what is nice about the shift rules. It doesn't completely take it out of the game. And so because of Juan Soto's batted ball tendencies, you definitely want a guy right there. And he was positioned perfectly to make this play. The Dominican Republic then does not threaten again until the seventh inning. Where we have a runner on second base. That is Austin Wells. Austin Wells, who moments before in a New York Yankee jamboree, took a David Bednar pitch over the head of Aaron Judge in right field for a double. Aaron Boone is confused, understandably, watching that. He is on second base with one out. Geraldo Perdomo puts one in, like, over Bobby Witt Jr.'s head, a line drive. Wells waits to see it through, runs to third, looks like he's ready to score. Carlos Fables, the Dominican third base coach, holds him up. PCA gathers the ball, throws it in. Not really a good throw, way up the line. Wells would have been safe. Do I think that if Tatis doesn't get thrown out earlier in the game, Fables sends him? Yeah. Yes, I do. Frankly, yes, I do. I think that I asked PCA about this after the game. He was like, yeah, you have a play like the one Judge had, and it does change your thinking whether you're aware of it or not. And that moment proves absolutely crucial as the next two hitters, Fernando Tatis Jr. and Ketel Marte, both strike out against Bednar. Bednar displaying some incredible stuff after doing so against Canada in the quarterfinal. And yeah, I understand maybe you want to be cautious with the top of your lineup coming up. Sure. But I just think that the Dominican got a little bit passive in this spot.
Yeah, and I think this is just a good time to just make the macro point about this whole game, which is what made it so unique, is, you know, we mentioned the Soto double play earlier, and I was like, oh, that was the moment. Oh, that was their chance. That was the key moment where they could have scored. And there were a couple for Team USA like that as well. We blew right past. Aaron Judge destroys the ball to center field. Julio Rodriguez makes what was maybe a home run rob, but at least a tremendous catch. That was in the fifth inning. But you have all these little moments where both teams come close to scoring. But because every hitter is amazing, you're not like, oh, they that was it. That was their chance. Because there's just another awesome hitter coming up. You mentioned the top of the lineup coming up. Well, the guy that had just got the hit batting ninth, Geraldo Perdomo, just, you know, led the National League in WAR last year. So when you have this many good players, you literally cannot turn away because every single pitch is high leverage, particularly because it's a one-run game the entire time. And so it just – that was the kind of the tension that I think was undeniable throughout it, even if I was still adjusting to watching this kind of baseball game in the middle of March. That was what was really cool. And yeah, the Bednar escape was unbelievable. Top of the eighth, nothing really happens there. Seranthony's, because again, the Dominican bullpen is doing their thing, right?
Well, so
Brazoban's great, and Uribe's great, and Seranthony's great.
Four outs from Huascar Brazoban. Book it,
love
baby.
That guy. Love that.
Team
guy.
USA's offense. Look, if you're listening, you know what happened. USA wins this game. Team USA's offense did not look good last night. Again, they threw it into cruise control after the fourth inning. They did not get a base runner to second base after the fourth inning. Their only base runners were a Kyle Schwarber single, a Kyle Schwarber walk the rest of the way. That was it. And it didn't matter because their own bullpen was incredible, but this offense was underwhelming once again. Anything on that before we go to the ninth inning?
No. So Garrett Whitlock, my goodness, is that guy good? Holy. I mean, He's Bednar escapes, and then Whitlock goes 1-2-3. But that bottom of the eighth begins with Juan Soto being called out on a slider below the zone. Now, and in the moment, I thought, okay, that was not a great call. But you know what? Garrett Whitlock is nasty. It is what it is. It's fine. We move on. It's leading off an inning. Oh, there's plenty of other good hitters still to come.
It's a 1-2 count.
It's a 1-2 count. I'm not going to focus on that one too much. But we fast forward to the bottom of the ninth, and this is a little bit of a different story. So here comes Mason Miller, who also pitched against Canada a couple of days ago. Junior Caminero strikes out to start the inning as he flails at a slider after swinging as hard as he possibly can at 101-102-mile-an-hour fastballs. Oh, my God, Mason Miller. And then Julio Rodriguez draws a walk. This was the first walk of the game for the Dominican team, which speaks to the United States pitching efforts. Julio had been hit by a pitch by Skeens earlier in the game, so that was another free pass. Perdomo, I believe, also had a hit by pitch earlier in the game. But otherwise, if there is something that Team USA has undeniably been elite at in this tournament, they have thrown strikes. Their strikeout-to-walk ratio is completely ludicrous, and it was only added last night against a Dominican team that, by all accounts, every offensive metric coming into this game was ridiculous, and that included drawing a ton of walks. But Julio, with one out here in the ninth against Mason Miller, is the first free pass USA allows. Then we have a moment that I will certainly remember from this, which is O'Neill Cruz pinch hitting for Austin Wells. And while this at bat does not end in anything I will necessarily remember for a long time, just the feeling of watching Mason Miller, who is one of the hardest throwers in the history of the sport, against O'Neill Cruz, who is one of the two hardest hitting humans that we have ever seen on a baseball field, and thinking about what would happen if he actually does connect. And that would be true if these guys face each other in the middle of August. But in this situation, just thinking about that possibility was riveting. Ultimately, it was not to be.
Yeah, it was just a ground out. But if I got a call from a scientist, right, and that scientist said, hey, can you break the space-time continuum and open up a wormhole, but you're only allowed to use baseball, I would probably go with Mason Miller and O'Neill Cruz to try and do that for me.
But that is not what happens. A wild pitch, I believe, during that bat does send Julio Rodriguez to second base, though. So we have the tying run on second base. After Cruz grounds out, Julio is
Cruz
on
then third. Moves so that runner over run. To third.
Yes.
Yeah. It's runner on third, two outs, bottom of the ninth, one run game, Geraldo Perdomo at the dish. And we will talk about that after this break on Baseball Barbecue. What's up, everybody? Jake Mintz here. Opening day is right around the corner. That also means it's college basketball time. Make sure you beat the buzzer this season. Yahoo Fantasy Bracket Mayhem Brackets are now open for your shot at $50,000. Fill out your men's and women's brackets for a chance to win $25,000 in both tournaments. Visit yahoofantasy.com/bracketmayhem to fill out your brackets now.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's preview the Reds bullpen. No, I'm just kidding. The moment of this game that will endure, it is unfortunate because it was a missed call. With the count full, Fernando Tatis Jr. on deck, Mason Miller unleashes a slider, I believe.
Slider. Yep. Slider.
About two balls below the strike zone, three balls below the strike zone, definitely below the strike zone. Will Smith, one of the worst framers in the sport. Scoops it up, frames it, strike three, game over. And everyone knew. There are missed calls that happen where you can't really tell in person because you're far away and the strike zone is small. This was obvious in real time. It's easier to tell up down in real time than it is in out in real time. And it was shocking, dude. It was unfortunate. It was a bummer. And it certainly
raised discourse about the oncoming automatic ball strike system.
Yeah, there's a few parts of this that we'll certainly get into, knowing that it was going to be the big talking point. The home plate umpire, Corey Blazer, who is a veteran MLB ump. He's not, if you go look at ump scorecards of the past few years, he is not notably good or bad. He is just one of the major league umps that we have. And most of the umps running these games and getting the assignment behind the home plate are major league umpires. And by the way, I saw like a version of the umpire scorecard that says that other than these two calls towards the end of the game, sounds like Corey Blazer had a pretty good game. You look at the rest of it, like it didn't seem like it was something we were talking about all night. It was not like we were noticing left and right, like, oh, whoa, what was going on there? But this play, this moment in this spot with ABS looming, like these are the last important games that we are going to have without the challenge system. And that is impossible to not think about when you see a moment like this. I want to get back to that in a second, because I know we had a conversation about that as we were leaving the ballpark last night. But the thing that really just hits me, and I mentioned this in my story that I wrote, and you can read our stories at Yahoo Sports, is who these calls went on, right? Soto and Perdomo. Like,
yeah,
these guys are great because they don't swing at balls. It's not the only reason, but Perdomo in particular, like that is essentially the skill that made him a major leaguer to begin with. And then he's of course taken that core competency and become an incredible shortstop and added power, and he's a switch hitter and all these other things. But the ability to discern ball and strikes, as we know, is part of what makes Juan Soto so special. And so to have that skill on display, to succeed in discerning that ball is not a strike, and to essentially be punished for it, or at least not rewarded for that in this huge game, when those are the skills that make this lineup so special. Geraldo Perdomo, the nine hitter in this lineup, having that kind of plate discipline is not something that any nine hitter in the history of the sport has ever had, because why would a hitter that good ever be batting ninth? And so to have that happen to him at the end of this at bat, that is on top of course, this being the last out and the tragedy of this ending DR's run. It's not the only reason they lost. As we mentioned, Team USA's pitching was unbelievable, but that it was those two guys in particular is what makes this so crappy. And also why I think people are excited to see hitters like that have the opportunity to say, hey, ump, you screwed that one up.
Now, even though ABS is coming, just because the system exists does not mean teams will have challenges in these spots. And that is so important to remember, because while in theory this was the last horrible missed call to end a game, that is not true. This will happen again. A team will get screwed, they will get squeezed, and they will be out of challenges. And that will be a discussion all its own. But we cannot pretend that just because we have ABS now, this is 100,000% in the clear. I do think that a moment like this, I'm curious to see how it will impact the way that teams use challenges. Like, for me, after watching this moment in person, right, I was like, You need to enter the ninth inning with a challenge. You need to enter the ninth inning with a challenge. Just in a playoff game, if the score is within three runs, like, you got to have one.
Yeah, it's a great point. And that's what I've really been thinking about, is knowing that this is going to still happen again because a team is not going to have a challenge. And it's impossible to forecast exactly the situation that is going to lead to that. But will the response to that be, oh, hey, you idiot, you shouldn't have challenged in the fifth. Oh, you know, this team strategy with challenges has always been reckless. You know, this is on the manager. This is on the front office. This is on the coaching staff. This is on this player or these players together collectively not, you know, applying their team strategy to make sure that they still had a challenge later in the game. Or is the response just going to be, we should have full ABS, right? Like, I honestly think that there's going to be a point where it's like, well, that is how you prevent this if you are that. Now, again, if you've listened to the show, you know that that is not something that we particularly want. And that is not something that I think a lot of people particularly want because of based on the surveys that MLB did. That's from fans. That's from players. That is how we ended up on the challenge system to begin with. And I think that that's a good thing. And I hope that that's where we stay as opposed to full ABS. But I also think it would be natural if we do get to that point when that does happen inevitably and we're like, well, wait a minute, we do have this technology. Why don't we just do this all the time? I'm not particularly looking forward to those conversations, but it is unfortunately a thing we have to reckon with because this is not the last time this will happen. However, there will also be a situation where it does not happen specifically because a team does have a challenge left. And that will also be a time where we will look back at this moment and be like, man, that would have been cool if Perdomo could have challenged, reached base, and been the go-ahead run in this incredible game between US and DR. But instead, this is the moment that is... There was a lot of cool stuff that happened in this game. This is something that is going to really linger. And that's especially relevant because this all-time highlight reel that you're watching of all of these Hall of Famers on the field is going to end with a call that is very obvious to does not look good. So the last out highlights that we like to cherish and replay over and over, just like we had the, you know, Ohtani throwing the perfect pitch to strike out Mike Trout. This one is now kind of stuck in this weird gray zone of, right, that's how that ended.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just a bummer. Like that's really how I feel. It's just a bummer. I thought that Albert Pujols, the Dominican manager, handled it very gracefully after the game. What do I think would have happened to Tatis? I think Mason Mueller would have blown his doors off and like the Dominican would have lost anyway.
Right. Yep.
But we'll never know. It's easy for me to say. Let's pivot and zoom out. Okay. Because the hype for this game was off the rails, off the charts. Now, we're part of that. We are the brother. We are the media. But I think that it's worth asking, did this live up to expectations? Did it match the hype? In some ways, yes. And in some ways, no.
Yeah. And I'm kind of struggling with this. This is also something that I don't want. We always do our best to just tell you how it felt if we're in the stadium, particularly in the postseason when we're there. But even if we're reacting to something that happened at home and we're having the same experience and as most of the people listening, we're just trying to tell you how it's feeling to us. This is also one that I'm not totally sure how this was felt by the average person watching it at home versus the people, you know, in the stadium, and whether this game will actually age well. And it's like we're still talking about this because of some of the stuff that happened during it, and even because of the ending to a degree. To me, watching it, I've mentioned sort of some of the feelings as it came, as it unfolded, where you have all of this talent and knowing that every single hitter that is coming to the plate can do something. And while not every pitcher that was on the mound is necessarily a household name, especially on the Dominican side, once you have the bullpen, the stuff is still some of the best stuff you've ever seen. And so every at bat, every moment did feel like it had weight. But it didn't have the same feeling of a like, oh my God, where you kind of elevate to this level of, you're looking at each other in the press box or even maybe you're watching with friends at home and you're looking at each other like, what am I watching? What is this game that we have arrived at? Which is, of course, a feeling that we had during the postseason on many occasions last year and certainly in game seven. So this I never game, had that feeling,
sure.
But this it game was still special stayed, in its own way.
It stayed on the rails, right? This game never went to the twilight zone. We never got weird and wacko. We didn't have punch counter punch. It was just a sharp, extremely well played baseball game. And I think the lack of fireworks doesn't inherently dampen the excitement, but also like it was just three runs and pitchers, because of pitch counts, whatever, didn't work deep into the game. Like if Severino and Skeens had each thrown seven innings, I think there would have been an added element of the theater to it that would have made it stick in my head. I am left, maybe, you know me, I'm a glass half empty guy. I am left this morning after, what did I get? 3.5 hours of sleep, 4 hours of sleep. I am left feeling a little underwhelmed. I'm not going to lie.
Mm.
Now, I'm not trying. It's just, there were moments of tension. I was locked into the game, obviously. It was on a knife's edge. The fact that it was a one-run game was incredible. But it didn't have the it didn't have the drama, like the narrative drama within the baseball game itself. Like, I like to think of a game as like a living, breathing organism, you know, that moves and flows. And this one didn't, after the Anthony homer, really move and flow in a way that players on the field aside, I found exhilarating. And I think the way that it ended does certainly sully it a little bit. So was this a game I'll remember for the rest of my life because of the talent that was on the field? Absolutely. Will I go back and watch the highlights of this in 2 years in the way that I do with some other famous games? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't. I agree with most of what you said. I think that not having any late scoring at all is something that is normally a key feature of a memorable game. Right, is having those late scores, those late lead changes or whatever. Again, the tension was there because it was a close game. And perhaps we shouldn't be surprised that when you put teams that are this good on the field together, that it is going to be close and lower scoring because the pitching is also this good. And you are still talking about hitters. Yeah, and the defense.
And the defense
is
this good.
Yeah, for sure. And that was relevant as well. And so for me, I think that, again, I don't want to undersell it because it was such a privilege to watch that much talent on the same field. But I agree it did not reach a level of the quality of the game. And it also kind of goes back to just how I started this whole podcast, which is that it's not that this tournament doesn't matter and that it doesn't mean something and that the players don't care and that it didn't feel like a game that was being played, you know, maxed out. At the same time, it's still an extremely short tournament. And it is hard when you get to the postseason, every second and every pitch, the weight of it is because you've been doing this for months. You have been
watching
these players suffer and succeed over and over and over. And if you get all the way to Game 7 of the World Series, you're like, oh my God, think about all of the things that all of us have been through. And then you start zooming in on the individuals and you're thinking about Yamamoto and you're thinking about Ohtani and you're thinking about Miguel Rojas and you're thinking about Ernie Clement and Addison Barger and you're just like, oh my God, what an end to this ride. Whereas here, like, yes, there was anticipation from the moment or whatever. We've known that the WBC was coming and the rosters come out and you're like, oh man, what if these teams match up in the semifinals? But the narrative tension, that you can simply not replicate. And that's something that the WBC, it's fine. It's still amazing. And I'm glad we have it. And I hope it continues to grow. And it's like, it's an awesome event and it's great for the sport and it grows the game and all those things, but it is a different exercise. It is a different kind of story that you are telling. And it is not an exhibition in the nature that it doesn't matter or it doesn't count, but it is a kind of manufactured setup where you are, and which is, again, it's great. I'm so glad it doesn't have the emotional heft. Or at least as an observer who has not necessarily been watching all of these characters do something together for months and months, that is how it differed from the postseason.
Yeah.
And I think why it did not quite feel in the same way as meaningful, which is such a funny way to kind of end up when we've had all these discussions about what matters more, a World Series or a WBC. And we can still have those conversations. I just feel like that contributed to me not getting all the way there just because it was like, this all just started a week, 10 days ago. And so I'm still, it's all just so contained and condensed and compact. And we're just like in it so fast.
Sure. Tyler Rogers just got here. You know, it's like, he just got here. It's like, I don't know. Yeah. I agree with most, if not all of what you said. I do think that a takeaway from last night was the U.S.'s outward care factor in terms of being, you know, in it, obviously was more evident than it has been in previous games. And I think Bryce Harper, for all the discourse about the Dominican is having more fun and whatever, like, yes, the Dominican looks like they're having a much better time. That is absolutely true. But what Bryce Harper said about, like, he can't dance like Tatis, like, he is right about that. These guys on the U.S. team are being who they are. Now, there is a conversation to be had of, like, does this U.S. team culturally represent the entirety of baseball in America? Probably not. Probably not. Is that the responsibility of the person constructing the roster? Or are you, like, the roster is pretty freaking good? It's more an indictment of where maybe the sport is at. I think that, I mean, let's just do the USA vibe check here, right? Since we last talked, I mean, the last time Jordan was on the show, they were not through to the knockout round for sure yet. And a lot has happened since then. There has been this, you know, we've talked about the efficiency, the business-like nature of US's run. And I do think that it would be foolish for, as Harper said, to just be shaking their hips like Tatis. But there have certainly been some odd moments throughout this run.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of that is still, like, there are still parts of that energy around the team that are still there, for sure, right? I mean, you're still hearing, just, you know, we got a job to do, you know, this is something, we came here to get these wins, and we're good, we got it. And certain personalities are giving different kind of communication when it comes to that. But at the same time, yeah, I think you still, it certainly seemed like they were having a lot more fun last night than we've sort of seen. It's, and I think that it does come across as authentic. Like, I do think that you can kind of tell. And I also think that even just thinking about the last out and you know, the clip of Paul Skeens reacting, like, I have not seen Paul Skeens. When you see the clip of him and he's, you know, screaming, let's go after the last out, it doesn't feel novel because it just looks like any other baseball player screaming, let's go. But you really do not see that kind of emotion out of Skeens. And it's funny because he walks into the press conference room afterwards and he's right back to, you know, monotone Paul, where he's like, just got to execute, just did a job. You know, that was really cool, really special, really honored, excited, excited. But I don't know if that showed me that, yeah, no, this is these guys really care about this. And I think some of the presentation around it has been goofy. The guys that are saying we're in it to win it, and then they just leave, right? They're just not on the team anymore. It's like, okay, are you really? Where Tarek Skubal falls into that, I think, is a worthy debate. And then, to be frank, of course, like, just a lot of the other discussion around Team USA involving off the field things, involving
Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, involving inviting Robert O'Neill to come speak to them, which Mark DeRosa confirmed, like, yes, this was my idea. That's, of course, one of the Navy SEALs who was involved in the assassination of Osama bin Laden. It's just like, okay, what are we trying to represent? And Mark DeRosa's answer saying, like, this was a way to, like, zoom out and realize why we're doing this. Sure. And it's like, okay, listen, we're not going to speak. We're not going to say, okay, what it means to represent the military and why that's going to be more important to some people than others. But obviously this choice with this background of very questionable, I would say, public veracity, speaking in other contexts. Yeah. It was something that was probably not necessarily thought through, but again, they're viewing it through a very different prism. And that was, I think, disappointing for some people, but also understandable for others.
I'm going to do my best here. Okay, I'm going to do my best here to try and kind of funnel this out through my mouth on low sleep. There's two dynamics at play here. I think the decision to have Robert O'Neill talk was bizarre and a misstep, not because of his background as a member of the military, more on that in a second, but because this is a very controversial figure who has said some very inappropriate things, whose entire brand seems to be dependent on something that is not necessarily true. Someone who broke the Navy SEAL code of silence to make himself something of a public figure. If Mark DeRosa and Team USA wanted a military veteran who served to come speak to the team, I think that that is, based upon the makeup of this team, a reasonable choice. Why did you pick this guy? To me, that is the thing, right? this was just bizarre and unnecessary. Then there's the conversation about, and again, as someone who didn't serve, like, I, maybe I'm out of pocket here. And I, if that's true, I apologize. But like the idea, the way that Team USA, some of the players in Team USA have like been wearing the front towards enemy shirts and have adopted this sort of like military-ish theme throughout what they're doing feels kind of cosplay-ish to me. I think that you can respect the military and what they do. And Paul Skeen saying he plays for the servicemen and women, for someone who went to the Air Force Academy, like, and is that's important to him. That's reasonable to me. But it's just like the using it as the theme is whereas like Venezuela is like, our theme is music. We have drums in the dugout. Like, to me, yeah, that is, again, maybe I just don't, I'm not coming from the same background as a lot of these guys, but like, it's not necessarily off-putting. It's just, it's a bit odd. Like the front towards enemy shirt that is like supposed to mimic an explosive device. Like, this is a baseball game. Like, you're not a, right, you're not in the military. You go to the military, like, you're free to go to the military. We're playing a baseball game.
And that's the thing. It's just like, what is our culture? What is the thing that we are saying? This is what brings us together. And hey, man, like, that is a culture for the United States. It is. The military is a big part of that.
Sure.
For better or for worse. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into that that we certainly aren't going to get into it towards the tail end of this baseball podcast. But again, as we get back to Team USA having fun, they know they're playing a baseball tournament. They are saying as much. It's saying, yes, this is not as important as what the servicemen and women are doing. It's like, right, sure, okay. So then let's just keep it here. Let's just – then let's not act like that this is some, you know, urgent combat and taking it in a way that's – because that I think is what the beauty of – and maybe we can spin this back to DR and kind of saying goodbye to them before we take one more break, which is just like – what has been so incredible watching these other teams, and DR is a big part of this. Venezuela is, of course, a big part of this. And we saw that in the game between them and, you know, all the discourse surrounding, oh, look at how these players interact while they're facing off against each other versus Team USA. This really like, no, don't talk to me. Don't shake my hand. I'm in combat. This is so urgent. And is this incredibly beautiful balance of, we are competing and we love this for the same reason. This sport has brought us so much joy, so much opportunity, that is why we are all doing this together. And I think by the end of last night, the way that the USA players, a lot of other ones were talking about it, the way the judge was talking about it, I think got to that point too. And I think that is good. That
I
is
agree.
A success. That is, I think, something that this tournament has successfully done.
Can I hop in? Can I hop in here? There, like, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I don't think that the best players on Team USA would have been like, dude, the way that the Dominican team is having fun, that is so awesome and it's entertaining and I love the way that they're enjoying the sport. It's just not how we go about it, or how we're not doing it in the same like overt, you know, I don't mean perform, like performing way. And that's okay. Yeah. I think that, and maybe I'm looking at this through two rose-colored glasses, I think that's a good thing. I think that means the sport has developed in a positive way. Yep. Over the last number of years, where this, like, we did not have Team USA, you know, directly shaking fist at sky, being grumpy about the Dominican team doing what they were doing. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which is good. And again, I think that, as Bryce and I know PCA talked about this too, right? It's fine. We don't need all of the teams to react in the same way. And I know that that's the instinct every time these clips go by, oh, well, why can't we have this every day in MLB? It's just not realistic. It's not natural. It's not authentic. And so finding a way that is authentically these teams that can feel like these games can matter, that it is fun, that it is some of the most fun baseball. I do think we've gotten to that point. Just we've obviously had, Team USA in particular has had some bumps along the way that has made it a little bit more difficult for us to get behind
Cal Raleigh
that notion, but I think now we're a little bit closer to that, and And, you know, now they're one win away from doing what we all thought they probably should have all along, which is going to, of course, depend on what happens tonight at Lone Depot, which we can get into. But anything else we want to wrap up on Team USA for now? Of course, we're going to keep having versions of this conversation because they still have one more game to play. But yeah, again, there's parts of this that are complicated, and we're doing our best on minimal sleep to convey how we feel about it. But yeah, that's where we're at. I'd be curious how people who listen to our show have taken it in over the last few days in particular.
Yeah. Send us an email. I really do want to hear from people on this, because the thing about, you know, Robert J. O'Neill that has kind of stuck with me is like, is this the person that we want representing the sport on a national stage? Right.
Yeah.
Is this That's who simple. We want to be associating with? And for me, the answer is no. Like, for Jake Mintz, yep. 30 years old, 6'1" on his college baseball player page, the answer is no. Is the answer yes for you? And if the answer is yes for you, like, I want to know why. I'm curious. Please, like, email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. All right, let's take a break. And when we get back, we will preview the other semifinal that will happen tonight. Venezuela. Welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. We've gone long because there was a lot to talk about with that ball game. But we have a whole other semifinal to preview and kind of a final to preview. By the time you're hearing this, we're probably already at the diamond for Venezuela against Italy in the semifinal, the winner of which will move on to the championship game on Tuesday night to face the United States of America. How did these teams get here? Italy defeating Puerto Rico 8-6 in a game where they once again jumped out early and often, poured the runs on, and then hung on for dear life in the ninth inning. Vinny Pasquantino and the Fighting A's are just the Cinderella story of this tournament. They have yet to lose a game. They will be taking on Venezuela, who knocked out the defending champion Japanese team the other night. I was in the building for this, 8-5. This, I think, was the best game of the tournament in terms of was loosey-goosey in that traditional postseason sense. Willier Abreu with the big swing in this one and a bat flip that nearly touched the roof of Lone Depot Park. I think Team Venezuela is a story all its own, but I would like to say goodbye to Japan here, considering how much air and energy we gave to them leading into the tournament. I actually think it's that simple. This was framed as an upset by some people, a shocker. Turns out Venezuela just had a better baseball team.
Yeah, and you know, if you go listen to our pal Yuri, not just in the appearances that he's been on this podcast, but also his own work, the Talking Yaku podcast, and all his work he does at Yaku Cosmopolitan, Yuri knows this team as well as anyone, you know, in the English speaking media space. And he said it. If you listen to how he talked about Samurai Japan, he said, like, yes, there is real talent on this team. Of course, you have the best player in the world in Ohtani. You have a pitcher like Yamamoto. You have this elite NPB talent. But he looked at the other rosters in this tournament, notably US, DR, and Venezuela, and said, I don't know if they're better than those teams. And so while the expectation, because they're the defending champs, because they have this history in this tournament, is to make a deep run, defending the title was always going to be difficult. However, falling in the quarters, their worst final in WBC, or their worst finish in WBC worst history finish. is I think does say something. This is, of course, their toughest quarterfinal opponent they've ever seen by far. And the format has changed over the years that has sort of impacted their ability to get through. But I mean, this was a hell of a game to have Ohtani and Acuña, you know, trading leadoff shots, to have Yamamoto not look good, but then settle in and kind of give you at least a little glimpse of, like, there he is. Like, that's the guy. That's one of the best pitchers in the world. That's a dude that can figure out how to get the best hitters in the world out when he needs to. We did get that glimpse of Yamamoto. But after that, some of the sequencing with the Japanese bullpen. And then ultimately, and then Suzuki, you know, that was really tough, right? Say Suzuki gets injured early on. He only gets one at bat before he departs injured after trying to steal second. So that hurt. That kind of sent the, now the guy who comes in for him, you know, Shota Morishita hits a home run, which was awesome. But the lineup just never quite totally clicked, kind of in the same way as Team USA, where they were really piling on late against the underbelly of these undermanned pitching staffs. And so it was a disappointing showing. It was weird seeing Ohtani get eliminated. Yes, he lost a bajillion games with the Angels, but of course, since winning the 2023 WBC, he's won the World Series
twice. We've never seen him get eliminated. We've never seen him get knocked out of, you know, postseason elimination baseball. Like, that is very true. That was odd. It's also just like, remember, yes, Japan won 2023. They didn't fly through that tournament, dude. They did not dominate.
Oh my gosh, they barely won the semi on
a walk-off, and they won the final by one run. And so I think in the end, this roster just wasn't very good. Jordan, as we look ahead to Venezuela against Italy tonight, very interesting pitching matchup. What are the keys to this one? Who do you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Venezuelan pitching is, I think, what I'm thinking about the most. Their bullpen has also been tremendous, but it has also been leaned on quite heavily. Guys like Angel Zerpa and Jose Buto and, you know, Daniel Palencia. We've seen these guys come in over and over and get some big outs. As we've seen with Team USA, like, they keep throwing Bednar and Mason Miller out there and Whitlock. And like, if these guys are available, these guys are available. The difference tonight is that because the championship is tomorrow, I think manager Omar Lopez, even if they have a steady lead of a couple of runs, is going to have to make some decisions, because I don't think it's realistic to expect someone that pitches tonight to pitch tomorrow in the middle of March. I just don't think you're seeing back-to-backs. I could be wrong. Maybe Palencia is ready to roll to close out Italy and to close out Team USA, whatever, we'll see. But because their starting pitching is already quite thin, with Montero, we'll see a little Luwinder Avila from Kansas City probably, who's pretty good. That's what I'm thinking about. It's just, how many pitchers does Venezuela use? Who do they use on that coast? Now, of course, all that scenario I'm just laying out is assuming that they have a lead against Italy. And Italy has not lost yet in this tournament, and Venezuela has. So I'll throw Italy back to you and what you're thinking about there, because they have obviously been incredible and have not really had to play from behind at all in this tournament.
That's the whole thing. What are you thinking about for them? That's, as much as we like their bullpen compared to what it was, it is not as good as it maybe needs to be. The way that Italy has won these games is they have gone up early and they have hung on for dear life. They really only have like 1.5 relievers that I feel really good about, right?
Yeah.
Greg Weissert is the guy. And so they need to score. They need to put runs on the board. Now, I think they can do that against Montero. I think they really can. I think that is the type of pitcher that they should be able to do damage against. If this game is close and low scoring, I got Venezuela. If this game gets off the rails, I think I lean Italy. I'm very excited for you to see the Venezuelan crowd tonight. It is very different than what we had last night. I think that there will be tension in the building tonight, but it will be a little bit looser in a positive way than it was for USA against the Dominican. Now, whoever wins this game will move on to the final to play Team USA. Team USA will be throwing Nolan McLean in that final. And who will it be for Venezuela?
Well, that's the thing. It's hard to imagine they would go back to E-Rod. Now, Eduardo Rodriguez, who started against DR and did not throw well, he would not be facing DR again, which we thought would be a possibility. That I really don't think would have happened. But maybe they would throw Eduardo Rodriguez in that game. I think the McLean choice is interesting. We're not going to pot again, you know, before the final, so we're not going to preview it exactly. But I do think that is a big part of this as well. And, you know, for Venezuela, these last two games against Japan and DR, they have been viewed more as the underdog, even though, as we just laid out, maybe they shouldn't have been against Japan. So how they handle being the team that's supposed to win against Italy, as good as Italy has played, that'll be really interesting. But I do think, as you mentioned, this game is a little bit more likely to go off the rails. I think I agree with that. I think because of the status of these two pitching staffs, they're still good pitchers here, and maybe we end up with another 2-1 game. Maybe that happens. But I think this one is more likely to be high scoring and a little bit more chaotic. And for that reason, I'm obviously quite excited. So we'll see. We will see where this goes. We will see who does face Team USA in the final. As I mentioned, you will not hear from us again until after that final. So we will be back on Wednesday. But any final thoughts before we say goodbye and maybe go get a few extra hours of sleep before we do this all again here in Miami? Year
two. Whew, feeling lucky. Thank you, folks, for listening. Jordan, tell people about Yahoo Fantasy Baseball before we get out of here, please.
It feels weird because we've been so focused on WBC. Opening day, almost here. Just a little over a week away. That means fantasy baseball season. Also almost here. Draft with your friends. Join a public league at Yahoo Fantasy. Sign up Yahoo Fantasy on the Yahoo Fantasy app or yahoofantasy.com/baseball. I've already done a couple of drafts and I've had a good time. But that's it for today's episode of Baseball Barbacast. Thank you, Jake Mitz, for co-hosting with me. Thank you, Andrew Hartz, TJ Brassel, for producing. As always, we appreciate it. Email us, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We did our best with the limited sleep. We hope we didn't say anything too stupid. But if we did, let us know. We always appreciate the feedback. Enjoy the last two games of the WBC. Everybody, we will talk to you on Wednesday.